When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, welcome to Conversations with the Voice of Reason. I'm your host, Benjamin Boyce, and today's conversant is Beth Bourne, who is a California mother whose daughter was taken up in gender identity, ideology, and has proceeded down the social transition path. And in this conversation, Beth speaks about that relationship and also her experience with Kaiser, the medical organization, and how it is promoting trans identity and medical transition, and how she proceeded without any gatekeeping to progress along a trans identity herself. As she details in an article written for Colin Wright's Reality's Last Stand, very shocking and concerning stuff, especially if you think about who is paying for this, which is anybody who's paying into insurance at this point. You can find more of Beth's work linked in the description below. And if you enjoy this content, consider liking, subscribing, and donating via the tip jars below. Without further ado, here is Beth Bourne. How are you?
I'm doing really well, thank you.
Are you reveling in the internet attention?
You know, the story came out last Monday, so it's been a pretty interesting time. You know, I've been speaking out publicly now for a year and a half, but this story is the first time where I think it's has my name on it and my family story. So, you know, I've been nervous, but it's going well.
What, from your perspective, what's the ratio of support to detraction?
Well, it probably depends where I'm looking. If I'm looking on, let's say, something like Facebook, and it's the community that I live in, which is a university town, which is in a very blue state and a very blue city, I think there's a lot of negative comments that maybe what I'm doing is pretending or taking advantage of, you know, a medical system that's set up to serve these trans identifying people. But if I go on Twitter or X, you know, I get a lot of support from people that are thankful that I'm trying to bring exposure to what's happening.
Yeah. What's the hierarchy of change for you? Like, what are you targeting most? Or are you just exposing what's going on?
That's a good question. I think there's so many different ways that I personally am trying to move the needle. So some of it is really just saying we're not even in reality anymore when we're telling young people that there's something else besides being a boy or girl or male or female, that there's these other identities. So that's really the bigger picture is, you know, what is reality and what does it mean to be a human? But I also think, I know personally that what's happening with Kaiser or with, you know, all these medical providers is that they're practicing medical fraud, right? They're giving treatments that actually make bodies unhealthy. So I'm just going at it at different angles, you know, big picture and, you know, specifically to this medical issue.
You bring up a good question, or two, actually. What is a human? What is reality? Do you have answers to those?
I didn't have answers a few years ago when my daughter first started identifying as a trans boy. You know, because to me, we never had to even question it, right? We were just born in our bodies. And there were things I didn't like about myself growing up. You know, I had brown hair and brown eyes and I wasn't, you know, lanky. There's all kinds of reasons why we don't like ourselves, but It's the body we were given. So once I should have been more clear in just saying our body is who we are, you know, that you are your body and you can't change that. So any ideas of what you might want to be, either it be your race or your height or your age or your gender, we have reality, and that is our body. And we should just be so thankful that we have a body to be in, and be thankful for anything it can do for us.
Why do you think this obsession with identity over, I guess human beings have always identified as things or been identified as different things throughout time, like your dad, your mom, your sister, you know, there's the familial identities, then there's your social identity. I'm a Smith, I'm a Miller, you know, I'm a newspaper boy, you know, or there's something that I do that I am. But were you surprised or were you watching this kind of switch and obsession to this other kind of identity? This, I'm a boy, I'm a girl, I'm neither, I'm between.
You know, I grew up in the 70s and I had three older brothers. And I had a father who was really excited to have a daughter. I think that's why they tried for a fourth child. But I was also raised to believe that it didn't matter if I was a girl or a boy, that nothing could stop me from doing anything I wanted to do. So having three older brothers, you know, I mowed the lawn, I rode the motocross bikes, I started playing with computers when they first came out. And my dad always said, you know, there's no reason you won't be the boss and not the secretary. Or, you know, my gifts were Legos and microscopes. I just grew up at a time where my parents were really trying to push back on regressive ideas of what it means to be a girl or boy. And so when I raised my daughter, you know, again, it was the same idea, but she actually had a lot of more female interests and, you know, more interest in dresses and makeup and all of that. So when she came out saying, I'm actually not a girl because I have these boy interests, you know, it shocked me because I had all those boy interests too, but nobody ever said, well, maybe you're born in the wrong body. So it just seemed so regressive, some of the ideas around what it meant to be a trans boy. When I first heard the idea that, you know, it came into our schools here in California, really hard in 2018. And so a lot of the kids started around the same time taking on this identity. And it just each year, more and more kids are getting caught up in it.
What was the situation where your daughter, as they say, came out? Like, was it just over dinner one day? Were you guys w shopping for bathing suits? And she said, no, going over to the boy section.
You know, it happens, at least what I'm seeing. A lot of these kids follow the same kind of pathway. In sixth grade, they come out as either bisexual or, you know, some kind of LGBTQ. And when my daughter said that in sixth grade, I actually was sort of upset. Like, how can you say you're bisexual? And for me, it was because I remember back to being 16 and still feeling unsure about wanting to have a kiss or any kind of romance with a boy. And so to have somebody only at 11 years old saying that they already decided they were bisexual, I should have not gotten upset with my daughter. I should have got upset with the schools and said, what's going on that we have kids declaring these identities or sexual interests at such a young age. And I didn't know. I didn't know it was really becoming part of like how kids sort of made their friendship groups, you know, over these identities. So yeah.
What, this is kind of an awkward
Oh,
question, but
so
what is
sorry.
it?
Sorry, just to go a little back to the question. The question was, how did she come out to me? So, 2 years later, she actually came out with a letter saying, you know, parents, I want you to know that these are my pronouns. This is my new name. I've spoken to my school counselor about it, and I want you to know that I'll go ahead and tell people when that I'd like to tell everybody. And I didn't know at the time, but it's sort of a standard script you can find online, when kids come out. And if I had known that, I probably would have done a better job at just kind of asking more questions, like, what do you mean by this? Or tell me more. But instead, I just, got in this feeling of like, what does this letter mean? And then, the next week, the letter said, I also want to start looking into puberty blockers and testosterone because I've looked into WPATH and Planned Parenthood, and I know that it can, be safely done. Or so she already had seen the citations, and my daughter's extremely intelligent, reading 2 or 3, 4 years, ahead of her grade, national merit scholar, perfect math SAT, so very bright. And so for her to read, these reports from WPATH and Planned Parenthood as a 13-year-old, that should have also been more alarms for me. But it was a few weeks later at a Kaiser appointment where her Kaiser doctor also said, "Hey, I hear the new pronouns. Let me change your identity, or not your identity. Let me change your pronouns and your preferred name here on your records. And let me tell you about this Kaiser clinic in Oakland that actually does, it's a one-stop shop where you can meet with a gender specialist, an endocrinologist, social workers, or an OB-GYN." And, it was just sort of offered to my child who was just there for a wellness visit. The idea that you could go and talk, just talk to these Kaiser specialists about their gender affirming care. And I was livid. I called, my daughter's pediatrician, and I said, I never gave you permission to bring up that topic in front of my child. We were trying to figure this out as a family. So.
Any like comorbidities with depression, anxiety, something like that, or was this?
Of it too is when the pediatrician offered, my daughter the chance to go to this pediatric gender clinic. She was actually the pediatrician who was filling in, so she didn't know that my daughter had already experienced some, self-harm and cutting. We had at that point we hadn't gone to dialectical behavior therapy, but my daughter had some trauma in sixth grade. A friend of hers, some very serious trauma, and that really did impact my child's mental health. And so that's part of it, right? Is you go through some trauma and maybe you don't want to be in that identity anymore, and you're just looking for a way to start over. And I think that the cutting and the self-harm also becomes a way of trying to get some control, or maybe just being disappointed with who you are. And then when you get offered this chance to, create a whole new identity for yourself, I think it can be very attractive to a young person, a 13-year-old going through what is also somewhat normal adolescence, right? That feeling of like, being afraid to grow into an adult human woman.
So what year did she come out
That was
as?
2018, so about
2018.
5 and a half years ago.
And what resources did you seek or did you find when you first encountered that?
That was 2018, and the only resources I could find, and I remember them so clearly, I think it was Fourth Wave Now. Will Malone, and then also Jesse Singal had just written that piece in The Atlantic, and my child psychiatrist shared it with me. And that just that one article said that, hey, there's some parents who are questioning this, rapid onset gender dysphoria in their child. And everything else I found was 100% affirming. So it was really just those three resources in 2018. And for a few years, I just kept really quiet, tried to find anything I could find. I finally got onto Twitter a year and a half ago, and that's been wonderful to just make all those connections there. But it was a very lonely place this first couple of years.
Well, how did you know that you were right or gender affirmation was wrong?
I just knew it. I don't know why some, and I've talked with this with my other friends, is, women friends, why do some of us immediately our first reaction is suspicion and disbelief and no, this can't be true. And for other, women friends, they just jump in and say, yes, this is what we need to do. This is life-saving. Of course we want to do what we can to help. So I don't know why. It must be something either from the way I was raised with my parents, or things in my life, but I didn't believe any of it from the beginning. And also I just didn't think my daughter could possibly be born in the wrong body because I didn't believe there was another way to be a girl,
Did she say that she was in the wrong body or?
She did. I mean, she said, I identify as, a trans male, or I identify as a boy, or she probably said, I am a boy,
Yeah.
so.
When you asked her what a boy is, what did she say? Snakes and snails and puppy dog tails?
We would just go in these, at dinner time in these circular logic where, she would flip it around and say, well, how do you know you're a woman? Or there was just no logic to it. And I think looking back, and I stopped actually because I knew it was going to hurt our relationship to even bring up the gender topic. But I should have like brought up other examples of times in history where we've made mistakes, maybe like the Salem witch trials or something like that, where how do you prove something, or even some of the cult activities or the medical scandals around opioids and lobotomies. I don't know. Some other topic that maybe would have her question. Just because everybody says something is true doesn't make it true.
Well, speaking
So.
of that, did you guys have a context of some sort of community of belief, or was it just, I'm assuming California, just kind of this California? Not disbelief, not belief, kind of just existing in this you do you kind of very just liberal and open society without anything to say, this is what reality is, this is what truth is. Wonder if she had any guardrails.
I would have thought that the guardrails in place, because we're a university town and it's filled with, academics here. Probably half of her classmates have parents that are professors or researchers or some way affiliated with the university. I would have thought that the truth would have been just science. The truth would have been that human, we're mammals. Sex is immutable, binary, or dysmorphic, all of that. But I hadn't realized that starting in her sixth grade science class, and then again through all junior high in her health class, they had changed the curriculum around what it means to be, a man or a woman or a boy or girl, that they'd actually introduced the idea that we now have something called transgender people, and they gave the example of intersex as being, a justification that, of course, gender is actually a spectrum. So I didn't know that, and she's very intelligent. I'm sure she read things and thought, oh, this is in science now. We know this is true.
It could be quite appealing, this gender stuff for a growing mind. It's handing you a world of rainbows and possibilities, and you get to create yourself. And then everybody, I mean, there's kind of the negative aspect of kind of it's very narcissistic, it's very image based, but everybody praises you and stuff like that. So there are incentives, social incentives, and other kinds of incentives there. But also, just if she is creative, this is just a realm that opens up. Like you can be this new thing, you can be this different thing, and you get to define what that thing is.
Yes, that's exactly it. And I think too, because there were several other, girls, students at her school identifying as transgender, they were also these very gifted, very intellectually mature students. And so they could almost form their group. And so the clustering you see of these trans identifying girls, you would often see them, in like a choir or a theater group or an art club. All the honors classes or AP classes would have, maybe a third of the students would be trans identifying. So it definitely, in the robotics club, certain groups of very smart kids spending time together, this would become their special interest, right? The whole transgender ideology.
So
as parents, we didn't know this, right? I didn't realize how much this was talked about at school. I didn't realize there was, the GSA club had been changed to the Gender Sexuality Alliance Club. There were flyers in the classrooms, there were flags showing all the possible different genders, the dozens of different genders, teachers and staff wearing pronoun pins, just asking for kids, the first day of school, what are your pronouns? All of this was kind of introduced right about 2018 into the schools here in California that I'm familiar with. So, my daughter, I say to people, she's the first really wave of guinea pig kids who, were taking on this identity in junior high school because they were introduced to it in the schools.
So. And when you spoke to her about how she would activate her manhood, like what does she want to do? Like wear certain clothes, have a different accent? Did she start to mess around with the way she walked? And did she, do stereotypically boy activities?
Yes, the belching, the sitting with your legs spread out wide.
Oh.
Wearing your pants really low on your hips, all of the mannerisms. But, after a few months, and also a lot of the, how she wanted her bedroom to look and what her activities were. But I had heard this from Sasha O'Malley and
Stella O'Malley.
Stella O'Malley and Sasha. Yeah. I got, yes, thanks. What I'd heard from them is that even when these girls are trying so hard to be trans boys, they can't keep away from some of the things they really love. So over time, she would go back to the knitting and the crocheting and the, just certain things that she'd love to do that are considered girl activities. But she, in the first year or two, definitely trying very hard to emulate her close friends who were smart boys, who are amazing young, teen boys. And I don't blame her for wanting to be just like them. Their life is easier. They don't have to worry about what they look like on, Instagram and how perfect their bodies are, what their makeup looks like. So to get to be a boy instead of a girl is very rational and logical to me. And if you have very, very accepting male friends who want you around, because it's for teen boys, it's really fun to have a girl around because she's, loves to talk and she's got all kinds of fun things to say. And I loved hanging out with men or boys my whole life too, but I don't think that I never thought that made me a boy. I just thought I like hanging out with guys.
So boys rule, girls drool kind of thing.
Right.
How did you contain this, or how did you manage to contain her? I guess you mentioned going to the doctor and the doctor providing her with this on-ramp. But
well, I feel lucky because the psychiatrist that we were seeing said to me, that she had a patient who was non-binary, who was prescribed puberty blockers on the first visit with an endocrinologist. So the psychiatrist, who I think was maybe kind of affirming of the whole idea, really warned me that you don't want to have your child talk to, one of these medical providers unless you're ready to medicalize them. And so I begged the psychiatrist to please talk to my ex-husband and my daughter and get us all to agree to wait until 18 before any medicalization could be done. And I asked the psychiatrist, please talk about brain development, talk about bone density, talk about, heart disease, anything you can say to point out that there's health risks and that we need to wait till my child's 18. And we did. We all went into, the therapist's room, and the therapist, after I begged to please give this information, we all agreed, my daughter and two parents, that we would wait till she was 18. And I actually think she was in some ways thankful because we took the choice out of her control. So she could tell all her friends, I tried, I wrote the letters, I did the research, I told them I needed the blockers and the hormones, but they said nothing till I'm 18. And that was a huge relief because I knew I had a few years to try to figure out more what I could do to help her become comfortable again. So, and I did compromise, right? I let her wear a binder for years. I let her wear her hair as short as she wanted, and I let her, change her name. She actually, we went to court, and she had her birth certificate changed to say she was born a boy, and that she had her legal name changed. And I fought that in court. I had an attorney representing me, but I lost, and it's because we're in California, and you can't really. Only one parent needs to agree to changing a child's gender marker on their birth certificate. But I think I was thankful that we got to go to a courtroom in front of a judge and I could present my arguments for why, there was such a thing. And actually I had all the citation from Lisa Littman on, ROGD kids. And my attorney was Bernadette Broyles, who's sort of a well-known attorney out of Georgia, kind of helping me write these arguments. So, but to me, I still think that is unbelievable that we could tell a mother that you have to have your daughter's birth certificate changed to say she was born a boy, when you know that that female body came out of your body and that female body can also create life too in the future. So, and we're changing this child's reality, right? We know she was born female. I had an amniocentesis done at 21 weeks that said, her chromosomes were XX. So the doctors didn't make a mistake. We know she's a female. So,
What did you
yeah.
perceive with regard to her mental state as the institutions around her promote and then go along with the lie of her reality? Does that is she insulated from cognitive dissonance because everybody else is lifting her up and shielding her from reality? Because I just don't know if you can live a life founded on a lie without that causing turmoil.
Maybe what was helpful is that right around this time, some of the language around being transgender, they started to say things like, you could be transgender and not do any drugs or hormones or surgeries. In fact, you can be transgender and not even look like you're transgender, right? You don't even have to cut your hair or change your clothes. So in some ways, I think that gave her at least the ability to say being transgender is just the thought. I don't know. The whole
Yeah.
thing to
Well,
me,
what is
then
it
it
then?
all falls
If it's
apart then,
nothing,
right?
yeah, if it's nothing, what
Exactly.
is it? Why do
Exactly.
it? Why be it?
Right. Even the trans activist who leads, the teen groups, the queer teen groups here in this town, she's always, or they is always saying that you don't have to do the medical part, you can just socially transition. But then I'm wondering, why do you even need a socially transition? Like, why do you need to do anything if we don't know what it is? So it's, but I do think they suggest to kids just change your pronouns. And a lot of kids, you know, they'll just change the second part. So a girl will be
She
a
there,
she,
yeah.
they, right? And I just think it's a way to try to get the kids to just start down that pathway, right? With a little step. And it just keeps going. And if you're a child like mine, who's so hardworking, so intelligent, so goal-oriented, it gives them this roadmap of like where to go. And they love checking off the boxes as they accomplish each step. So it's a very seductive kind of ideology, right? For a teen who's gifted.
Like what is that ideology functioning in? Is it filling up a space that is meaningless or devoid of meaning? Is it serving the role that something else that she's lacking? What do you think about that?
Well, you know, now that I've had some more time to think about how did my identity form. You know, I grew up with Republican parents, living overseas and then San Diego. And then when I got to college, towards the end of college, I met an environmentalist, you know, who was all about riding bikes and you know, conserving the earth. And I just loved the idea that I was going to become this conservationist and I was going to, you know, give away my car and ride my bike and live with a bunch of people and, you know, do everything I could to save the earth. And so I myself at 21 decided I'm not conservative. I'm now, you know, this very progressive person. And so I just think it's normal to want to grab onto something when you want a community, you want an identity, you want people to tell you how you can be special. And so this trans identity is a very easy one to grab onto, especially in a community like Davis, where kids are told, you know, don't go to church, don't have any, you know, religious community or faith. You know, there so places you might have had community. You know, I'd taken my kids to church every other week when they were with me on the weekends. By the time you hit 12 or 13 in Davis, you know, kids really push on their parents to go to church or, you know, whatever faith they're in. And so I think it just becomes another community. You know, I think sports would have been also one that would have been very fitting for my daughter. But because she's so bright, I think she just enjoyed being around really smart, quirky, intellectual kids. And so to be on a softball team, you're not surrounding yourself by the very smartest kids. And she just enjoyed that kind of company. So, you know, I think another parent just mentioned like her son identifies as a girl, that a third of the kids at the school, you know, private school on the National Merit Scholar list are trans identified. Like, what are the odds that, you know, you would have 20 kids who are national merits semifinalists, you know, being trans identified? That there must be some connection to having this very gifted mind and looking for some identity.
How did you get along or confront or not confront the adults involved in this? Like you mentioned somebody running a queer group for teens. So this is isn't this grooming? Aren't they? Isn't this a little bit overreach and creepy?
Well, so I did take my daughter to the queer teen group, and I remember feeling very uncomfortable that I was dropping my child off with a group of adults who would be talking to kids about this, you know, like rainbow coalition. And I should have said, you know, I'm going to sit in on a meeting, or I'm going to at least see what you're talking about. But you're told that your kids need this privacy and they need, you know, this special community that they should be in without any parent involvement. So I let that happen. And now I, of course, regret all of that. But during COVID, I joined one of the Zoom meetings for the rainbow families here in my community. And they knew I had a trans-identified child. So they let me on the call and I just watched the discussion. And it was one parent and almost all mothers. It was all mothers except one couple. And they would just go take turns talking about what had happened in the last month, what had transpired around their child's gender. And so they were sharing if their child was taking blockers or if their child was, getting closer to their appointment for top surgery. Several of the parents also said they were doing things on their own trans identity journey. So mothers saying they were transgender, talking about their kids that are transgender, and then just this feeling of like these mothers, they feel special because they're affirming their child, And so when they got to my turn, they wanted me to share something about my child and how hard it was, like, is something going wrong in her school where she's being bullied? And, I'd mentioned we were getting some passports to go on an international trip. And they said, that must be so hard with her gender identity. And I said, no, the passport official had no problem with it. I just, he looked at my kid and said, oh, they're trans, but they wanted me to have some kind of struggle that I was sharing with the group. And I just thought there's something not right about the parents and how this is becoming, this makes them feel like they're in some special position as well. So you have the kids doing it as well as the parents. After that, I think I really started to try to do what I could to expose how the not only in the schools, but also in this special, it's a community organization that helps out trans families and trans kids, and they have access to our kids in the clubs. So really exposing more of that side of it too, that it's not just the curriculum and the policies in the schools, but then we have these community activists that have access to our kids at the schools. And then, this, we're in a small town, 60,000 people. So I think that the pediatricians in this town are all also part of this parent group, right? Saying that we need to do what we can to affirm these trans kids. So it's, I stayed very quiet for 3 years because I needed to, have friendships and have my daughter, not see me as being an enemy or a threat to this gender stuff happening in our town. But once she hit 17, and that's when my story starts, this expose I did, I just said I have to do something, anything I can to expose this medical scandal that's happening all around us.
On top of this, you can't move her out of state because of the family situation, right? And
Right,
on top
right.
of that, probably are aware that California law system will probably fall on the side of whoever's affirming. So if there were bad blood between you and your ex-husband or her father, then you're cut out. Like there's serious consequences for you, right? Were you aware of that? And did that, how did you manage that?
So I have actually testified on AB 975. That was the law that would actually change that. It didn't end up getting passed, but that was in maybe the last 9 months. So when my ex-husband asked for full legal and physical custody a year and a half ago, right around her 17th birthday, I had Candace Jackson, one of these attorneys representing me, and we went into a settlement the morning of the court hearing. And I said, I'm willing to give up. It was actually just visitation. I still had physical and legal custody, but I will give up visitation in exchange that my daughter still, we keep to this 18-year-old limit for any medical interventions. So that was kind of the compromise. And that point is when my daughter asked for no contact, which I knew it was coming. The idea that if you have a parent that's not affirming, that child will say no contact. And And I was okay with it in the sense that I knew that I had one more year to help my daughter just be comfortable with who she was. And since I wasn't going to be directly interacting with her, I could still attend her theater performances and her choir performances. I could see her from a distance, but I could see that she was, I believe, desisting. So that was helpful. And then I just worked as hard as I could as an activist to kind of push back on this.
That sounds very painful.
It is very, very, very painful, but it's all relative, right? So at the same time, my daughter saying no contact to me, I can see that she's, starting to change her dress a little. But I had friends at that time who their daughters already were having their mastectomies, and friends who hadn't seen their sons for 5 years because of, this gender stuff. So there are so many parents around me who are going through much more painful situations than I was, that I think I've said this to Aaron Friday or a few other people. I was in a really lucky position where I knew my daughter was safe because, she has a father who cares and loves for her very much. She's an excellent student. She had a great job. But I'm also so, I have so much knowledge about this gender stuff from the medical side and the school side that I can be somebody who's willing to work, I don't want to say full time, but I'm willing to give every moment of my free time to trying to fight this ideology.
So
So,
that returns to, pardon me?
right. So I just stayed really busy, instead
Yeah.
of wallowing in the sadness of missing my daughter, I just started planning one protest rally or one, forum or going to school board meetings, anything I could to stay busy around this topic.
So returning to one of my first questions, what is the hierarchy of importance, or how does this? Well, there's the social contagion aspect, which is just limited to the trans identifying or rapidly onset gender dysphoric youth. There's the cultural aspect, there's the school aspect, there's the medical aspect, there's the law aspect. Like, where does it start to fall? Or what's the, how do you perceive it as something that can be changed? Like, where are the weak points, or where does the attention need to go? For you, how do you keep it in your head, or like what shape does it take in your head?
Well, I wish I had a crystal ball because I don't know what's going to make this whole thing come crashing down. I thought it would be the lawsuits, but the courts are too slow. I don't know. I don't really know. Well, for me, if we could just stop sterilizing people and stop with these surgeries, would be at least we would slow that part down. So that's just what I'm hoping is that if we can just point out that Kaiser and all these other medical providers are actually doing medical fraud because what they're doing, there's no basis to it being good medicine. So of course I'm excited about the WPATH files, but I don't know how much that will have an impact. I really don't know what it is that's going to make the big difference. So I'm just willing to throw darts at everything. I'll try anything. If for me, it's a lot of it's been around sports and protecting women and girls' sports because I think that topic affects people. That affects anybody who has a daughter or a niece or granddaughter, where this medical side, it's a smaller percentage of people. And then once you realize, hey, why is that unfair that a boy or a man can all of a sudden identify into a girl's sports team and into their bathrooms? That doesn't make sense. Then maybe we'll get more people to really question all of it. But, so I don't know. I don't know the answer.
So you bring up a pretty heavy word there, fraud, medical fraud. With regard to your exposé, what did you reveal or what did you learn through the process? Well, first of all, how did you get in your head to do this covert op?
So that was September of 2022. And a few weeks earlier, lives a TikTok, Chaya had helped me share some information about my daughter getting invited to a gender expression workshop by Kaiser.
A
And
gender expression
expression
workshop.
workshop. Right. And so what this workshop was, it was like an 8-week class where teens would meet over Zoom and they would learn about how to social transition. So they would learn how to do things like cut their hair, wear makeup, if they're boy to girl, how to lower their voices, how to, do mannerisms. This gender expression workshop was actually the pilot program of a chief doctor in Redwood City who is a man who transitioned to be a trans woman in his 50s. His name is Rachel Firth. I'm sorry, Grace Firth. And so he piloted this idea for adults and then wanted to bring it into the teens at Kaiser. And so my daughter was invited to this gender expression workshop without my knowledge. So a few weeks later, when I got this note from Kaiser, telling me that I was due for my cervical cancer screening and that any individual between 21 and 65 with a cervix should go in for their screening. I was so alarmed by the word individual with a cervix that I sent the note to my Kaiser doctor saying, "Why would you use the word individual?" And she said, wrote back to me that afternoon saying it was to be inclusive of their trans identified, or she said their trans mask patients and their gender fluid patients. And then I wrote back saying, "I really wish you would talk to your department and see if you could have this changed because you could still put in the word woman. You don't need to erase us." And she wrote back and said, I don't know if she wrote back, but she just said, "This is why we're doing it." And at that point, I just said, "Well, then please consider me non-binary and my pronouns are they, them, and I'd like to go on testosterone." And within 45 minutes, I got a letter back from Kaiser, an email saying, "We've changed your medical records.
You were
We now
being
have,
facetious.
it was, I don't know if it was facetious. I mean, that's how I read it, right? I said, I like playing tennis, I think is what I said. So I consider myself non-binary. And I just thought, well, shoot, if they're gonna, I'm assuming there must be some like boilerplate language or template, right? Because it said, "Thank you, we've changed your records. Let us know what we can do to help you go further." And I think the word she said was, "Let us know how we can get the ball rolling." And so I said, "Great." And that's all it took. After that, it was like, "When do you want to come in for your blood work so we can put you on hormones? When do you want to come in to talk to the gender specialist about the top surgery?" And it's almost all done over Zoom. It's all online telemedicine. So I could just do it from the comfort of my dining room table and I got prescribed everything.
Yeah, but what's the likelihood of a woman of your age, with your life experience being a mother and stuff, transitioning? Like, how frequent is that? Is that pretty frequent
Well,
nowadays? Is this what Californians are just doing nowadays?
exactly. I would have thought that they would question that, right? Why would a woman at 54 who has, I mean, I don't know why they didn't see that my child had also changed their gender marker, or maybe that's common, right? But nothing came up. And when I got on the workshop for top surgery, which Kaiser invites all, patients who are looking for top surgery to go on these workshops, there were 50 to 60 people on the call. And I would say at least half of them were like my age, 40, 50, 60-year-olds. So it's not like it's just young people who are searching for themselves. I think it's attractive to any woman who feels lonely, that maybe they are unhappy with their place. I think it just gives you this idea that you can become a new person, and you get so much attention. So the call, is filled with women that to me possibly could have been lesbian women or just homely, unattractive women or women who are overweight and maybe not that healthy in their bodies. But it definitely surprised me that I did not stand out as the oldest person at all on this
Okay.
call.
Yeah.
And all of these people were there because they were excited to have their top surgery.
I guess it's a cash cow. Is that a bad
Right.
joke? Yeah.
Yeah.
What happens to all these boobs? Do they just get thrown into the ocean? Like, where do they go?
I don't know. When I asked the doctor about, when I would be getting in, she said, "Well, I have some good news. We just hired four new plastic surgeons here in Sacramento because of the demand for top surgery." So, what I think it's so why they're able to make so much money doing these top surgeries is because, while my copay is only $100, Kaiser can bill, a top surgery is like 10, 15,000, right? So all the members are paying towards these top surgeries. It's only $100 for me. But for the surgeons, it's such an easy surgery compared to doing a mastectomy on a woman who has had breast cancer, right? They're not worried about getting out the cancerous breast tissue. They can just be sloppy and just chop off. And then you also don't have to put implants in. So the surgeon, when I met with her, she had me lift up my shirt and, with no bra so she could see what my breasts look like. And it's all telemedicine, right? So I'm going like this, showing her what I look like. And she says, "Oh, yeah, you look like you'll be a great candidate." And then she said, "Tell me what you want." And it's in the article, but it's this little chart that says, "Do you want what level of flatness, what level of nipple sensation and scarring? Like, what are your goals?" So if you want to be, really flat, you will have less nipple sensation because they're probably going to just remove your nipples. And she said, "Don't worry about that because we can just use tattoos and just, like paint on new nipples." And she made some suggestions. If you want a more masculine look, what we'll do is we'll just move your nipples off to the side and lower. So yeah, it's
What
really,
about complications? Do they go through that realistically?
no, they just say, "The complications from top surgery are like any other surgery. We'll just look for infection, So the complications, they make it sound like the complication is just the incision, but really the complication is you regretting that you've lost the healthy part of your body that actually serves much more than just, looks. Like your breasts, they're part of your sexual, your ability to have good sexual relationships as a woman, or to one day maybe breastfeed a child, but none of that is discussed. That whole regret idea.
You know what? This is a new idea. I haven't heard it before, but maybe we can enlist bra companies because this is affecting their bottom line too, to pony up
Like
some money
that.
for these kind of slow
Yes.
down these surgeries and stuff like that.
Yes.
Is this a class issue? Did you notice that? Like, is this like a particular like lower middle upper class white woman kind of thing?
You
Like
know,
a
I would say it's definitely middle upper class in the sense that you have the time to like be so focused on yourself that
Yeah.
you would even think that, "Oh, I should be doing these surgeries and worried about my facial hair." Where I think if you're in a working class, you're just trying to get by. You're making sure there's food on the table and you can pay your bills. So yeah, I would say it's a middle upper class. idea.
So this is unique among plastic surgeries or body modifications in that it can be written off where there are other, can you get a so-called boob job? Can you get a breast enlargement? And will that not be paid by Kaiser? Is that kind of a thing? Is that gender affirming care to get like a, to go from a B to a C?
You know, I think that would be another really interesting way to push this or try to do some undercover work is,
Yeah.
you know, my good friend wanted a breast reduction. She's had three kids, larger breasts, and she had to pay, I think, like $10,000 to have a breast reduction done and prove that it was medically necessary because her back was hurting. Where I think she should have just gone in and said, I want a breast reduction because I feel a little bit masculine and I'd like to be a, you know, a B cup instead of a E cup, or you know, or you know, they also offered me body contouring, which I think means,
Whoa,
you
what's
know,
that?
oh yeah. So body contouring, if you're female wanting to be more masculine, it's where they take off some of this fatty tissue around your hips or your stomach, so you look more masculine. But a lot of women want that removed anyways. So any woman who wants a tummy tuck, they should just come in and say it's for gender affirming care. I
Okay.
don't know. I've proven that it's very, very easy. You get this white glove treatment. Everyone is so excited for you that I would suggest people try it for all kinds of, you know, cosmetic, facial, body contouring, breast stuff, whatever you want.
Well, yeah, until the spigot runs dry, and it, invariably it has to. This is really expensive. This is a huge money sink. This is a huge burden on the medical infrastructure, especially just after COVID, which wreaked havoc on the medical field financially. Well, maybe they got a lot of money
Yeah.
from that and they have to spend it somewhere, but I don't know.
And I'm also wondering though, so if Kaiser, they're notorious for having a terrible mental health treatment, you know, services. You have to wait 3 or 4 months to see a therapist or a psychologist, and the appointments are really short. So Kaiser, instead of telling someone like me who came in with all this, you know, I gave all these examples of why I had mental health issues. They
Like
just say, well,
how did you lean into that?
yeah, I did. I said, you know, my mom had body dysmorphia, that, you know, I feel uncomfortable with my body, that I
Do you
had
hear
been.
voices? Did you go that? Did you push it that way? See
I
what you
did
can get
say
away with.
voices. That would have been good. I did say that, you know, I was sexually assaulted, so I had some trauma, and that I had an eating disorder when I was younger. So I gave all these examples of why I needed some mental health treatment. But isn't it cheaper for Kaiser just to offer some drugs? You know, I got a testosterone pump that's supposed to solve all these problems, and that only took 8 minutes for Kaiser. So instead of spending all this money giving me mental health treatment, to me, it seems very inexpensive to just offer this pump. And then, of course, it'll lead to future medical procedures I'll need.
Yeah. What's this? Do you have the pump
So,
with you in the room right
yeah, it is.
now?
It's right
Because you
here.
looked over there. Is
Yeah, it's right
it
here, like
cool
that.
looking?
Actually, I've never taken the, so here it is. It's got my name on
Oh, it's
it. And
gel.
yeah, it was $5, my copay. And I guess you have to be really careful. The pharmacist
Yeah.
said, only wear gloves. And when I asked him, I said, well, you know, I went onto your Kaiser page and it says that this specific testosterone gel should not be given to children or women. And I said, but you're giving it to me right now. And
Yeah, but you're not a woman.
the pharmacist looked at me. He was an older man. And I could see this, like, look of shock in his face. Like he knew he was giving me something that was being given off label and that it wasn't safe for me. But he said, but you're doing this because it's gender care, right? And I said, yeah, that's why. And so, but I just wanted to see how his reaction, and you could see he
Yeah.
knew that this is not safe. So.
What, how did he change when you participated in the lie of whatever this gender care stuff is? Did he like, oh, okay, it's fine.
He looked
Gender.
relief, right? Like, okay, she's not gonna push harder on me as a professional pharmacist giving something that I know is dangerous. And we were just at the counter when it was happening, but I just, I pulled him aside and said, "Tell me about this pump." And then he just explained how where you put it on your body and the dosage. Apply one pump to skin daily, apply to your shoulder. When I told, so the part of the story that in there, it said that I told my doctor, "I don't want to be on this testosterone because I decided I don't want the facial hair. I just want to go straight to the phalloplasty." And they made an exception for me. So, yeah, instead of 11 months, which is, I guess, the standard for Kaiser, that you need to be on hormones before you can get bottom surgery, they made an exception and said that I could go straight into the phalloplasty to because I wanted to match. I wanted to have a male top, with no breasts, and I wanted to have my fake penis. And they got an exception from the Kaiser Clinic in San
Nice.
Francisco.
Wow. They're
Yeah.
so
Accommodating.
permissive. Yeah, accommodating. So, did you go penis shopping? Do they have like a book
I
that?
did. I did. So this is the interesting part about picking out your phallus is you have to make a choice, and this is literally what they said to me. Your choice is to be able to pee standing up or to have penetrative sex, but you can't have both.
Oh, you can't have both.
No,
Can they
no.
just give you two peenies?
You only get one. Well, at least all the examples they showed me, you only can pick one.
Okay.
Actually, no, I guess I take that back. There's a second choice. You pick your donor site. So if you pick your forearm, the skin on your forearm, or the flesh, or you pick the other donor site, could be your thigh. And if you pick your forearm, the phallus will be a smaller, longer, thinner penis. If you pick your thigh flesh, it'll be thicker. So the other question is, if you're picking penetrative sex, do you want a thick penis or a thinner one? So
What if you want penetrative sex while standing up? Is there?
I didn't ask that question. I did pick the penetrative sex because I said I had housemates who did. They actually peed sitting down on the toilet because their moms didn't want to mess. But I did not ask the question about penetrative sex standing up. So it's
Did you? Like with that shocking interaction with the pharmacist, did you notice any cracks in the people who are pushing the penises? Like, this is kind of novel, this is new, this is experimental, or did they treat it like this is just completely normal? We have all the kinks worked out.
completely normal. I think the number is only like 10% of trans masculine patients, make a choice to do the hysterectomy and the phalloplasty. I think hysterectomies are more common, but it's about 10%. The gender affirming specialist I was talking to, they identified as non-binary, so they had they them pronouns. So I think when I'm talking to them about wanting this phallus, it seems perfectly normal to them, right? They've been talking to all kinds of other patients about it, so they're just excited for me. They're like, "We're so
Oh,
happy we
wow.
can provide this for you." And again, Kaiser had me sit in on a workshop for phalloplasty where they had a previous patient talk about their recovery from the process. And this was a young woman, kind of in a dark, depressing, looked like an apartment. And she was talking about having just had her surgery, and she looked drugged out. But she showed us her arm and sort of how the scar was healing. And I think these workshops are a way for you to say, I feel scared, but look, I'm watching somebody else say how great it was for them, and they made it through it, so why can't I do it? So, and I don't know any other area of medicine where they have these kinds of panels or workshops where you see past patients talk about their hip replacement or their knee surgery, right? Like, why is Kaiser doing these special workshops for just top surgeries and phalloplasties? I'm not sure. Or maybe they just want to keep getting you invested, right? So you just, like for the testosterone, the doctor said, well, you can just put your toe in and test the waters and just do a micro dose. Just start off with a little and see how you feel. And so I just don't know anything else in medicine where there's just this feeling of like, we're encouraging you to try it. Just take a little, taste of it. I don't know if there's an incentive bonus for them that the more patients they get through, they get bumped up or raises. But when I've talked to Kaiser doctors about other healthcare, like a dermatologist, I get so much pushback. Nobody wants to give me anything unless I, really advocate for myself. And this is the opposite. Like they are actually, encouraging you or doing anything they can to make you want to try the drugs and the surgeries. Yeah, it's there is no, well, they like to say, we don't want to be gatekeepers, and that is true. There's no gatekeeping and there's no safeguarding in place.
Well, but it's not just no gatekeeping, no safeguarding. It's active and affirmative. Pushing this.
Right.
So
This is reminding me when I asked the primary care physician about using testosterone. And I said, I don't know if I was asking about if I get facial hair and male pattern baldness and, different questions about it. And she said, well, it's the Wild West out here. And that's her exact words. It's the Wild West. So I think she knew herself that we're just experimenting on people with these hormones,
Yeah.
and giving them this way. Yeah. I've got another graph here, but with my testosterone results, when they did the blood test, they told me that my testosterone was very, very low, but it's because the range they were using was for a male body, when in fact, my testosterone for a 53-year-old woman is very high. But they don't want the patient, well, for whatever reason, they're not even showing the patient anymore what you should have for your biological reality. They're like lying to you on the numbers they show you when they give you your test results. So for a woman, I think I was at like the 15, and I don't even remember the unit for my testosterone level, but they said I needed to be up to the 200 level, but that's for a male, not for a woman.
So could it be the case that you go to one doctor and then they show you your relative to man testosterone, and then you go to the next doctor in the same visit because you have to deal with something, let's just say cervical, right? And then he shows you, he goes back to the woman thing and he's like, well, you're actually really high. I'm really worried about like how high your testosterone is because there's all these side effects of this, and it's not going to be good for you long term and stuff. I mean, do they still have to? I wonder if they do, if you experience them. The same organization, just do one thing over here, but then like reality is still operating over here with regard to women's health.
You know what they do, I think, because I did just get an invitation a few weeks ago, is I got an invitation to go to it was a gender affirming, some kind of screening, but I think it's where they were doing pap smears. But they say, because you're one of our gender patients, we want you to feel comfortable. So we're going to do a special workshop for just these, trans identifying patients. And we will make sure you feel comfortable. So it's almost like they're taking you out of the regular medical system and putting you in this special, whatever, the VIP room where everyone will be delusional and nobody will refer to you by accident as a woman.
So if we think about Europe, a lot of countries in Europe are specifically with the youth transition or youth gender therapies, so-called, they're changing their policies, they're looking for data not even at the data. They're looking for data and they're saying we don't have enough, or they're saying this is inconclusive, or they're saying actually this is not something that we're going to do unless it's, they're openly saying we'll do this puberty blocker stuff only as it, within controlled trials, only as an experiment. So they're being honest that it is an experiment. They're going in that direction, and it is the case that they're probably going that direction because a lot of their health care is nationalized, whereas in the United States we have a different system. We're insurance run. There is some state subsidies. There's Medicare. This big system. How do you suppose, or in your research, and then since going public in the way that you've had, what is the lay of the land on changing the, this gender medicine breakoff thing? Lawsuits, policy. Is it just adults are going to do what adults are going to do and we can't stop them? So Kaiser Permanente is going to foot the bill somehow, or everybody has to sign off on paying for this for everybody else?
I don't really know the answer. I'm hoping that my story will give people some other good ideas. I think it would make sense for me maybe to sue for medical fraud, knowing that they were billing, huge amounts of money to do these procedures when actually they weren't doing anything to help my long-term health. Maybe that's one angle. Yeah, I don't know. I do know that some of the attorneys who are helping these detransitioners are interested
Yeah,
in my story and my
detransitioners.
records. Yeah,
Yeah.
because I have, very extensive records of my interactions with people.
Wow. Yeah. Have you ever been curious to just do a little bit of that jelly testosterone stuff? You're like, yeah, I'm feeling a little down today. I want to up my
Well,
libidinous urges or something like that,
I haven't been that interested,
But your
but
son's like, give me.
my boyfriend, he's turning 60 soon. He's like, a lot of men want that testosterone, but no, I haven't opened it yet. And actually, yeah, my son is 16, but I haven't told him about this whole story. But yeah, I probably should sell this or something. If I were something.
Well, don't say that on don't yeah, don't say that on
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. But that is, one of the points I think I saw online is, has Kaiser contacted you? And I have heard nothing, not a peep from them since the story came out 2 weeks ago. And my guess is they realize that anything they say to me, of course, I would blast, right? I mean, or are they going to say I can't be a member anymore, or that I've done something wrong? Because
Have you done something wrong?
I don't think so. I honestly, at the time, I was interested in, the surgeries and the drugs. And I did feel non-binary, and I feel non-binary.
Oh,
And I'm
yeah.
actually interested in this because I have a child who just turned 18. So I would love to go to court and or have this be more of Kaiser trying to defend what they're doing and what they've done,
How can they prove bad faith or good faith with this?
Right,
The ideology is
exactly.
so soggy. How could they ever
Right. Right.
pin it down without
Right.
affecting it?
If you go onto their, all you have to do is type in the word Kaiser gender dysphoria, and then you can look up what's the definition, what's the symptoms, how's it diagnosed, and how's it treated. And they just lay it out for you. All you have to say is that, you don't like parts of your body, that you feel anxious or stressed about them. You diagnose yourself by talking to your doctor about feeling this distress, and then you get treated by picking from this menu of things of what you'd like. So they lay it out for you. So it's very easy to diagnose yourself and then to decide what treatment you want.
Is there anything like this?
No, I can't think of anything.
Like bipolar disorder? I really want
No.
lithium. I'm just gonna go up and say I'm.
No. In fact, what I ac actually point out is that one of my had an issue with an eating disorder, and Kaiser is very careful that if a child or teen has an eating disorder, that you take it out of the child's, control, and you give it to the parents, and you do a family-based treatment where you have that child eat a whole plate of food at every meal so they can get back to their healthy weight. They're not allowed to exercise. They're not allowed to go to PE class. They need to eat and they need to get to healthy weight because you're not going to trust a child knows what they should weigh or that they think they're overweight. But in my same family with another one of my children, they say, "Oh, you don't like the way your body looks? You want to change your body? Well, we don't even want your mother or father in the room. We're going to help you get the body you want." What is the difference between an eating disorder and gender dysphoria? I don't see it. I think they're both control. I think they're both being unhappy with your body, both trying to become somebody different or new. And they're treated completely differently by Kaiser.
What is some of the pushback that you've received that you think is somewhat valid with the article? If anything, some of the stronger arguments
Think
against you.
would be sharing personal information about my daughter. And I can definitely see that maybe this was a very poor decision as a mother and hurtful towards my daughter. But I'm hoping somewhere down the road, she'll realize that not only do I want to make sure that she can be safe, but that there's so many young people, teens, young adults, or just anyone who's having a mental health issue who's, right now getting ready to go in for their top surgery or for their, vagioplasty, and that we're losing healthy bodies to this insane gender ideology or, medical scandal. And so I hope she doesn't feel hurt by what I'm doing, but I'm just in a unique situation where I can actually try to do something publicly. And this story was just trying to expose Kaiser for what it really is, what it's doing.
Who's the bigger fraudster, you or them?
Yeah, I would say it's the medical establishment. It's the APA, the AMA, WPATH. I think they know now that what they're doing is wrong and that they're
Inexcusable.
inexcusable. Yep.
And schools. What's your take on that, on the education system?
I am It's in, I'm in disbelief what has happened to our schools and how they've been captured. And I think it came through, I want to say the Democrats, through Obama, through here in California, Governor Brown, now Newsom, through the California Teachers Union, and then through our local teachers union, through the curriculum. We have policies in California where teachers and counselors are allowed to socially transition a child at school with name, new pronouns, and a new gender identity without notifying the parents. If the child says, "I'd like this to just be something I do at school, please don't let my parents know," they are happy to accommodate that. And it's allowed by state policies, which is incredibly dangerous because, to socially transition a child without any professionals actually qualified to do that kind of work without having parents tell you the story about why their child might be so unhappy where they're at. I just can't believe that's happening. So I attend a school board meeting every week, every other week, somewhere in the area to just speak out to our school boards. But they don't want to hear it. They think they call me transphobic, they call me bigoted, they call me, hateful and extremist, just for saying that parents need to wake up and realize it's not safe for their kids in public schools, just with what's going on right now around this.
Have you noticed any parents changing, like a sea change at all in the the common opinion on this matter in your locality?
I Unfortunately, we're so divided by political parties that I've made huge number of friends, who are conservative, which I'm thankful for. Otherwise, I'd feel very alone. I think the moderates, or there's people that realize this is wrong, but they don't want to risk any kind of like standing in the community, in their professional life or their social life. So they're just kind of staying quiet, but they're watching. And I often, I don't know, maybe every couple of days I'll get some direct message in Facebook thanking me and just saying, there's a lot more people out here that are supporting what you're doing. We're just staying quiet. So yeah, people aren't really ready to speak out yet, but they're watching. So if there is a parent who can say something, you might encourage somebody else to maybe not be so afraid.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a tired trope, so I don't even want to bring it up, but there are moments in history that we look back on and cheekily say, well, I would have stood up. I would have stopped that terrible thing from happening. There's no way I would have been involved in facilitating the social madness of that sort. And then you're like, but I have my job to worry about, and my mortgage and my family and my friends, and nobody wants to see themselves as a coward, but nobody wants to. I mean, it's hard to risk things. I don't know. What has this taught you about the state of America, like where we are? Do you have big thoughts like that? Maybe California. Have you rethought like where we are in history or where we are as a nation or society?
I think that we're just in this insane time where, to me, it looks like the left is getting more and more far radical left with these ideas and what they're pushing. And so, to me, the conservative, this the right side, is just looking like the same people. So I don't know. I'm hoping that come November, all of my Democrat friends who believe in women's rights will, vote red because maybe that'll wake people up, right? If we could get women to understand that all of this gender stuff is really hurting women's safety and rights, and then of course, protecting kids and vulnerable adults. Why would you vote for any political party that is championing this?
Yeah, I don't want to go here, but abortion could be the thing
Yes,
that keeps
yes.
people blue rather than red.
Right. And I think that's why at least in California, we still keep it out there as like, we haven't done more to try to get those laws in place because then you keep having this carrot for the blues, for the Democrats, right? You could lose this if you don't keep voting for us. And I heard it last night in Biden's, State of the Union address, right, about abortion rights. And so, yeah, I agree.
And if you look at who's doing the abortions and the birth control stuff, it's the same people who are
It
trans
is.
kids.
It is. Yeah, Planned Parenthood. I mean, anybody who says they're so thankful that Planned Parenthood is, supporting their campaign, I feel like I would never vote for you because if you don't understand that Planned Parenthood has been completely like bought into this idea, then you're just not even knowledgeable about what's happening here. So,
What are you doing next? What's up next?
I'm going back in the next few months to push on the protecting girls and women's sports. So, yeah, we had a big event back in August that was shut down because we misgendered when we were talking about male athletes. And that kind of made national, international news. And so we're working with Alliance Defending Freedom on a lawsuit against our library. And we'll be holding another event in a couple of weeks here. And we're going to have the discussion again. And the county library, they know that they violated our First Amendment rights when they shut down our event back in August. And so we will be able to use, plain, simple language when talking about men and women's sports.
In prisons,
So
maybe a little bit.
I, that would be a wonderful next pursuit of mine, is that I would love to do some rallies and protests in front of women's prisons, because yeah, those are the most disenfranchised women who are being, subjected to rape and sexual assault because of this self-ID and gender ideology. Yeah, they're we need to be there fighting for them too. So
And so, what do
that's
you, I guess you wrote this article for Colin Wright's Reality's Last Stand. Do you have your own repository of research and opinion?
I I'm not really a writer or even a speaker. I love to put on these events and do different kinds of action activities. So, but I might start putting them up on my Substack, like letting people know what the next event will be in case people want to join us. But yeah, I'm thankful that, Colin Wright has just been a tremendous amount of help with me here in Davis getting the word out. And I am
Yeah, I
thankful
think he's
for
actually from there,
he
or
is
just
he's
around the
from
state from there.
nearby, and he went to UC Davis for his undergraduate degree. So
I grew
yeah.
up in Rockland, just up the road there.
Oh, I forgot that you also have ties to this area. Yes. So yeah. And also I should mention that the California Protect Kids, that new ballot initiative. I do spend weekends trying to gather signatures.
How is that going?
Well, you bring up Rockland. So if you stand in front of, a Walmart in Rockland or Roseville or Folsom, you get a lot of signatures quickly. If you stand at the farmers market in Davis, not so much. You'll get a few. So I think being strategic of where you're going, because, if you're in an area that has more conservative people, they'll really understand quickly the issue around protecting bodies from medicalization and the sports, and then also the school issue. So it's going pretty well, but we're we've got a deadline, so we've got a lot of signatures together.
Yeah, when's the deadline?
I believe
Just
it's the end of March, or we can, there's another deadline if we push back the ballot
okay.
measure,
Yeah,
but
just to
it's coming
give a
up.
kind of a call to action to anybody in California, you can sign this California Protect Kids. Is that the
That's
official
it.
thing? And I'll be linking that in the description as well as links to your work. What has been your, like, the hope that has guided you, or like the thought or the sense of the sense of hope that's guided you through this with your daughter?
I think the hope is that there's so much more discussion around this topic, right? I mean, every day now, there's some event happening somewhere in the world where either information's being released or there's a rally or something. So we're just bringing more attention to it. And I think people are getting stronger with their voice. So yeah, that's my hope. With my own family, I'm just hoping with time that my daughter just learns that she's an amazing, beautiful, perfect person just as she is, and that this medicine that's being offered is not medicine. It's actually experimental and unsafe. And yeah, it's a lot though. It's definitely a lot as a mom, a parent. When you think about what's happening to our kids, you can get in a really dark place. So I just get outside and garden and go for a walk.
Well, Beth, thank you so much for allowing me to pick your brain on this issue. And thanks to Colin for setting us up with this call.
Oh, thank you. It's just a real pleasure, and I just appreciate all that you're doing. Thank you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm going to end the recording.
Okay.